might be asking, why are we doing this series called Strengthening Relationships? As a pastor for the last 22 years, I have gotten the opportunity to talk to a lot of people and hear their stories about their lives and hear their greatest joys and their greatest regrets. And when I hear people's greatest joys, they don't tell me about the great job that they had or the great house that they bought. The greatest joys in our lives are people. Are they not? Family, friends, people that we hold dear, those are our greatest joys. Nod your head if you agree, those are our greatest joys. Amen. Some of you are still deciding. I wonder about the type of friends you have. Oh, wow. Okay. And then there comes the greatest regrets. And when I talk to people about their greatest regrets are not the business that failed or the fact they didn't buy stocks in Google in 2001. Their greatest regrets are the people that they've hurt. And the people that they're estranged from. Those are their greatest regrets. Nod your head if you agree those are people's greatest regrets. And so when it comes to relationships, I realize that we as humans greatly value relationships. These are the most important things in our relationship. And if the Bible is right that we are designed for relationship, then surely the Bible should say a thing or two about how to have stronger relationships. Does that sound interesting to you? I'm here to tell you that the Bible does say many things about how you and I can have stronger relationships. And so this series is not just for the married. It's not just for the single. It's not just for those who have kids or don't have kids. This series is for everybody, young and old, because we all have relationships. Now, for many of us, when it comes to relationships, when you think of what's the most important thing in a relationship, the first thing you might think of is love, right? And so that's where we're going to start. We're going to start off with the most obvious step, love. And for many of us, love started off in the dating world. And the dating world today, for those of you who've been out of the loop for a little while, some of you have, the dating world looks very different today than it did when you probably dated. There are some terms you might not even know about the dating world. And here are some in our wonderful digital age. Yeah, look familiar? In our wonderful digital age, here's some terms you may not be familiar with in case you find yourself going into the dating world again. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen to you. Here's one, breadcrumbing. You know what breadcrumbing means? This is when someone on the internet pretends to be interested in you. They'll like your posts. They'll comment on things. They'll want to know, are you interested in them? But here's the deal. They're not really interested in you. That's called breadcrumbing. Makes you feel all warm and fuzzy all over, doesn't it? Yeah, crummy. Yeah, that's about it. Here's one you may be familiar with, ghosting. How many of you know what ghosting is? Okay, clearly some people out of the dating scene. Ghosting is when you've been dating someone for some time, and suddenly, without warning, they stop answering your phone call. They stop answering your texts. They disappear from the face of the earth. If that happens to you, you have been ghosted. Also makes you feel warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? All right, what's the next one? Micro-cheating. Micro-cheating is about when you are... And I'm not saying I made these up, okay? Micro-cheating is when you are dating someone, but you're also kind of interested in someone on the side. And here's the thing. You go out of your way to hide that relationship from the person that you are dating. So the person that you are interested in, you may change their name in your phone so that it's a pseudonym. You know, instead of Susie, it might be Bob. So you might be getting a lot of texts from Bob. It's really from Susie. See? That's called micro-cheating. Then there's love bombing. Love bombing is when someone is infatuated with you. They are head over heels in love with you. They just want to spend all their time with you. You are their soulmate. And in being infatuated with you, your defenses begin to lower, and you begin to release information that you might not normally release, including financial information. I'm looking at our treasurer right now. In that case, you've been love bombed. And they'll take your information, they'll do with it what they want, and that's the end of that. Benching. Oh, yes, just like in sports, you may not be the only player in the game. And, as such, you may get benched. You may be put to the side. You are now a backup in someone else's relationship. A fallback, if you will, in case things don't work out with the person they're really interested in. In which case, you will have been benched. Isn't love grand? I bet you're all just itching to get back into the dating world. But that is love in 2018. It's complex and it's difficult. I'm thinking we are not going to find out how to really love people by looking at modern dating trends. And so instead, we are going to go to the greatest example of love, of course, Jesus himself. And we're going to see how we can strengthen the relationships we have by looking at his example. You may have heard the term free love. This is a great 60s term, usually in a sexual context. However, the phrase free love is, as we are going to find out, a contradiction. Because love is never free. Now, I thought about, you know, changing love is never free to love is never free, man. But I thought, in order for you all to take me seriously this morning, I'm just going to leave it at love is never free, okay? Now, when I say love is never free, I do not mean in any sense that we earn God's love. We do not earn God's love. The point of this morning's message is this. If you really love someone, that love will cost you. Because having love for someone is never free. And there are three key ingredients to love, really costs to love, that we must be willing to make in order to have a free and loving relationship with someone. At the end of this message, I'm going to ask three tough questions that all of us have to answer to determine how loving are we towards the people in our lives. Let's get started. First thing, love requires loss. And it says in God's word, we know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. So we also ought to give up our lives for our brothers and sisters. If someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? Over and over, the Bible talks about love, not in terms of attraction or even affection, but in terms of action. Loving action. Jesus gave up his life for us. This is what real love looks like. Love costs. And it costs things we may not expect. One of the things that love costs us is freedom. Is freedom. There's the idea in our world that freedom is about the ability to do whatever you want. That's freedom. That is what the experts call negative freedom. And did you know that love cannot exist in negative freedom? You cannot have a loving relationship with someone who finds great joy in doing whatever they want. The two don't go hand in hand. They're exclusive of one another. See, when love is self-centered, it's impossible to really love. Love requires the loss of freedom. Think about Jesus as our example. Because Jesus had such tremendous love for us, it crimped his freedom. He could have packed up, gone off to Spain, to some all-inclusive club and work on his golf swing for the rest of his life. He could have found himself, you know, married with grandkids at his cabin by the lake at the end of his life, if he wanted to. He had that freedom if he wanted to do whatever he wanted. But love curtails our freedom. He didn't have those choices. And here in this passage that we're looking at right in front of us, he gets to something that's really uncomfortable. Because it says, we don't have the freedom to spend our money the way we want either. When you really love, it curtails even how you use money. Isn't that something? We forfeit our freedom for love. The more love we have, the more loss we will experience. Say that again. The more love we have, the more loss we will experience. And Jesus had the ultimate love, so he had the ultimate loss. See? Love is never free. Second, love requires pain. The night Jesus was betrayed, we read this in Luke 22. Jesus walked away about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Then an angel from heaven appeared and strengthened him. He prayed more fervently, and he was in such agony of spirit, that his sweat fell to the ground like great drops of blood. I find it interesting, don't you, that the people who witnessed Jesus' life, the end of his life, didn't spend a lot of time on the physical agony. We make a big deal of it to us, because that's horrifying. The idea of someone being crucified, of being scourged and beaten in a crown of thorns, we spend a lot of time on that, but they almost make a footnote on it. Like, it's not a big deal, but they spend far more time talking about his spiritual agony, his emotional agony, the things that he went through, the pain that he suffered that wasn't necessarily physical. And Jesus didn't just suffer that. He suffered rejection, the pain of rejection. Do you remember before Jesus was betrayed, all the disciples, do you remember this? All the disciples gathered together and they said, we will never leave you, Jesus. We're with you to the end. We will give up our lives for you. Do you remember that? At the first sign of trouble, gone. Very human, right? But in that moment, what would you have felt? I'm guessing pain, betrayal, hurt, maybe even anger. One of the things that we do with couples who are about to get married sometimes is we gather pieces of advice for them. You ever seen this done? You know, these wedding showers, they gather pieces of advice. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. They gather pieces of advice because, you know, those of us who are married surely must know something about marriage. So we write these pieces of advice down. Well, Brené Brown, who is an emotions expert, people ask her, what advice do you give people who are about to be married? And this is what she said. I used to tell couples getting married that the only thing I could tell them with certainty was that they would hurt each other. To love is to know the loss of love. When you love someone, you will experience pain. And it's one thing to be rejected, let's say, by a stranger on the street, and they call you an idiot. That hurts. When your spouse tells you you're an idiot, how much more does that mean? They're in a position to hurt. If you are unwilling to endure pain, you're unwilling to possess love. Say that again. If you are unwilling to endure pain, you are unwilling to possess love. Does anyone know who this guy is? Ravi Zacharias. What? No, it's Ravi Zacharias. But good guess. I love people just randomly shouting out stuff. It's good. Ravi Zacharias. Now, Ravi Zacharias, if you don't know who that is, he's a fairly famous evangelist in certain circles. And he tells this story about when he was six that kind of disturbed me a little bit. But it fits so well that I wanted to share with you this story. When he was 6 years old, he was playing football in the neighbor's yard. And he, like me, was a little guy. And he was playing with guys who were older than him. So he got pushed around quite a bit. After a certain period of time, he found himself running back to his own yard with tears in his eyes, saying, "I'm not tough enough. I'm not tough enough." And his mom met him on the front porch. And in that moment, she bent down and looked Ravi right in the eyes. She said, "Hit me in the nose." And at first, Ravi said, he thought, "Mom, you're crazy. I'm not hitting my mom in the nose." Then she stuck her nose out to make a nice, easy target and said, "Hit me in the nose." And she kept insisting, "Hit me in the nose, hit me in the nose." So finally, it's like, "Okay, Mom, whatever." He wound up and he belted her. Blood running down her face, smile on her face. She said, "Now you go back. You are tough." Years later, she reflected on that. And she said, "All I wanted to do was wrap him up in a blanket and take him inside and hug him." She said, "I knew if he was going to be the person that God wanted him to be, it was a pivotal moment." So she did what she did. Well, I'm not recommending this. But she was willing to endure pain. Why? Because she loved her son. She had such tremendous love for her son that it wasn't out of the realm of possibilities for her to endure pain for him. Love requires pain. No one demonstrated that. Went to the cross. See, love is never free. And finally, love requires risk. It says in Romans 5, 6 through 8, "Most people would not be willing to die for an upright person, though someone might perhaps be willing to die for a person who is especially good. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners." You know, the older I get, the more I appreciate this passage. I didn't kind of get it growing up. But this passage is basically saying this. It's in our nature to not want to give our lives for anyone. We're rather selfish that way. We kind of prize our lives, don't you? I know I do. It said, but if someone was really dear to you, you may consider someone that you're friends with, or a family member, someone, you know, you've got this mutual love relationship with them, you might consider that. But then he says, but compare that to Jesus, who gave up his life for the people who were ridiculing him, who beat him, who scourged him, who put a crown of thorns on his head, who hammered spikes into his wrists and feet. You said, "Save yourself if you're the Messiah." The people who were his enemies, he gave up his life. And here's the point. He gave up his life with no guarantees that anyone would accept his invitation or relationship. And that's the thing. Love has no guarantees of return on your investment. This great story about Dr. Livingston, who was working in Africa, and a missions organization from a church wrote to him and said, "Have you found a good road to where you are? If so, we want to send other men to join you." Dr. Livingston looked at their note, sat down, and wrote a note of his own. And it said this: "If you have men who will come only if there is a good road, I don't want them. I want men who will come even if there is no road at all." Love is not a guaranteed pathway. There are no money-back guarantees when it comes to love. There's no well-beaten road to travel. Marriage is one of the great ultimate risks. Because we think we know the person that we're marrying. And we don't. Because when we stand up there and we promise to love this person, we're not just promising to love the person standing before us. We're promising to love that person in the future. And we don't know how they're going to change. Terrifying, isn't it? And yet, that marriage covenant is so beautiful and binding. It creates the greatest, most intimate relationship to you human beings can have. Because they promised to love one another no matter how they change. Isn't that amazing? Wow. Jesus made a high-stakes gamble. He laid down his life. He went all in. In the hopes that you and I would respond to his invitation for a relationship. Just in the hope. In the possibility. With love, there is risk. You give up safety, you give up the sure things. Love is never free. How many of you have heard the term love is spelled T-I-M-E? Raise your hand if you've heard love is spelled T-I-M-E. No, you've never heard that. Okay, interesting. I want to know, is that actually true? After reading through the pages of Scripture, I think spelling love T-I-M-E is a little like spelling milkshake I-C-E. Some of you are spelling I. You can drink it. It's not very satisfying. Because there's so much more to love than just spending time with the person. Love involves loss, pain, risk. Now let's dig a little deeper. If having love requires loss, pain, and risk, why would you ever want to really love someone? Really simple answer is you and I are designed for it. You and I are designed for it. We are designed for loving relationships with God and with each other. And in fact, without loving relationships, we find life to be very unsatisfying. Like a milkshake made of ice and meat. We need to experience love. God designed us to experience love. But how? How is the big question right now? Well, I've got good news. For those of you who are followers of Jesus, 1 John 4:7 and 8 says this. Dear friends, let us continue to love one another. That's what we're talking about, right? How do we continue to love one another? What's the deal? How do we do that? He said, now John, let us in on a little secret. This is the big secret. You've got to know this. If you want a loving relationship with someone, if you want a loving relationship with your spouse, with your friends, with your family, you've got to know what comes next. This is going to tell you how this all shakes down. Let us continue to love one another. Love comes from God. Anyone who loves is a child of God and knows God. But anyone who does not love does not know God, for God is love. I want to just focus in on the fact that all love comes from God. If you're going to have a relationship with someone where you are willing to endure loss, pain, and risk the way Jesus did, it's going to come from a supernatural source. And it can only come from God. When you experience God's love, as we sang about earlier, when you experience God's love, a love that is so deep that God is willing to experience loss, pain, and risk for us, it will wreck you. you experience God's love, it will wreck you of your self-protection, of your selfishness, and your desire for safety. It will wreck you. You will not find about real love in how-to books or O magazine or swiping left or right or the momentary adrenaline rush seeing someone across a crowded room. Love only has one source. One. And it says that if you want to tap into that source, you can't just know about God. You have to know Him. The more you know Him, the more wrecked you become. It's an amazing thing. God opens us up. Experience more of Him, and experience greater relationships with other people that are based on the fact that we are willing to endure loss, pain, and risk. Now I want to dig one level deeper. Because if I ended it right here, I'd be concerned that all of us in this room would leave here thinking this message was just about the spouse, kids, parents, friends. Strangely enough, the Bible doesn't spend a lot of time talking about those relationships. Not nearly as much as the Bible talks about the loving relationships between followers of Jesus and the church. Watch this. It says in 1 John 3:14, if we love our Christian brothers and sisters, if we love them, if we are willing to endure loss, pain, and risk the way Jesus did for them, it proves that we have passed from death to life. Strange statement. But a person who has no love is still dead. The love that we have for the people in this room is the great litmus test. The love we have for the people in this room is the test as to whether we have actually been transformed by the power of God or not. How's that? How are you dealing with that? Do we really know God? It will be proven by how much we love people in this room, in other churches, Christians around the world. So when we gather together as followers of Jesus, whether it be here or in our connect groups or as seniors or as you, or when we get together over coffee, there are three important questions we have to ask ourselves. Because it's really easy to say, oh, I'm a loving person. I love people. And it should be no problem asking these three questions. And they're questions that I have had to ask myself as well. Are you ready? Here they are. The answer in the question, do I love others? What more am I willing to lose? Look around this room. What more am I willing to lose? Second question. What more am I willing to lose? What pain am I willing to endure for the people of the 911 Church, for the people of the Baptist Church, for the people of any church, all my brothers and sisters? What am I willing to endure for them? And finally, what more am I willing to risk for them? The cross is the ultimate expression of loss, pain, and risk. Real love costs more than we want it to because we fall short in imagining how beautiful it can be. I'll say that again. Real love costs more than we want it to because we fall short of imagining how beautiful it can be. I want to tell you a little story in closing, about a football player named Jean-Pierre Adams. Jean-Pierre Adams turned 70 years old in the spring, in March of this year. In 1982, he went in to have routine knee surgery. And he never woke up. For the last 36 years, he has been in a coma, breathing on his own. And his wife, Bernadette, has been taking care of him, turning him over when he needs it. She's been changing him when he needs it. 36 years. Now I wonder, does she know about loss? Does she know about pain and risk? What did she lose? She could have remarried. She's lost 36 years of her life tending for this man. What about pain? She's been in a one-sided relationship for 36 years. What is she willing to risk? The fact is, this could be as good as it gets. It may never get any better. And she's willing to risk that for the sake of her husband. Jesus didn't just become a sacrifice for us. He became an example of what a loving relationship requires. Over and over, he calls us to imitate him, not for his sake, but for the sake of our overprotected, lonely hearts. Until we embrace the cost of love, we cannot enjoy the potential.
The love of God, love that we have received and that we're supposed to give, love that costs us everything, that seems foolish to people. 1 Corinthians says that Jesus dying on the cross was foolishness, and preaching was foolishness, but to those who are saved, it's the power of salvation and good news. The love of God seems reckless to people who don't have true love, because it's all about what I'm giving up and what I'm losing. But that's the love that we're called to. So as we think about loving each other and loving those in this room, loving the people that we work with, that we see in our daily lives, we just want to think about God's love. Love that died on a cross that was extravagant. Not a plan that we would ever make, but that's the love that we should be called to. So let's just sing. We're going to sing a song, Reckless Love, a new song for us. Just invite you to reflect on these words.
Still you give yourself away. Oh, the
love that we have for each other. Love that gives no matter what. Do we give away our love to people who don't earn it? When our family, our co-workers don't treat us the way we want to be treated, do we still give love? Just like Jesus gave us his love.
I was your foe, still your love fought for me. You have been so, so good to me. And I felt
reckless love of God.
Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Chases me down, fights till I found, leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it, I don't deserve it, still you give yourself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God.
Shadow, mountain, you are my love, coming after me. The snow wall you won't kick down, lie you won't tear down, coming after me. The snow shadow you won't lay down, mountain, you won't my love, coming after me. Deserve it, still you gave yourself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never ending, reckless love of God. Oh, the overwhelming, never ending, reckless love of God. Oh, it chases me down, fights. I'm found, leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it, I don't deserve it, still you gave yourself away. Oh, they are.